Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Beats Research Radio, a podcast and YouTube channel dedicated to bringing our community closer to research in the science and engineering fields. My name is Devin, a student from the Translational and Molecular Medicine program at the University of Ottawa, and I'll be your host on today's special podcast episode for the Science Communication TMM 4950 course. To date, around 28 million people in the world are experiencing some form of corneal blindness, with very limited treatment options available. Transplantation of human donor corneas has been the most prevalent treatment option for corneal blindness for over a century now. However, corneal transplant access is greatly limited by a global shortage of cornea donors, resulting in only 1 out of 70 people receiving adequate treatment. Today, we are excited to be discussing with you a promising field of research that aims to harness the body's own regenerative power to treat corneal blindness in a new and innovative way. So, Dr. Griffith, we're so happy to have you today. Dr. May Griffith is a lead researcher at the University of Montreal and holds a Canada Research Chair position in biomaterials and stem cell ophthalmology. She's one of the brilliant minds behind the development of liquid cornea, an injectable liquid that gels in the eye to help heal corneal perforations. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
So to start off, we know that most of your work is centered around corneal repair and regeneration. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about how you became inspired to study eye conditions specifically?
Yeah, actually, it's a very long story because it started when I was a young child, maybe around 6 years old. And I was tagging along with my father on one of his trips with several other adult volunteers to provide medical care and vaccinations. And this was in a remote village in Southeast Asia. There, I saw my first blind person. So while the adults were out doing their work, I was waiting in the Jeep on my own. And several of the village children came by, they came up to the Jeep and they peered through the windows. I saw a child's face with milky white eyes pressed against the window, and I was terrified. So my father later explained to me that the child was blind because of problems with the cornea, mostly due to malnutrition and could not see. So this left a very, very big impression on me. I decided it was terrible that this child who was around my age could not see all the nice things around us. And I thought I needed to do something about it. So I'm still trying to do something about it today.
Wow, that certainly would have made an impression on me too. As we were talking about, one of your main research focuses is corneal perforations. So mm-hmm. for those listening who are unfamiliar with that, can you maybe expand on how these are commonly acquired?
Okay. A corneal perforation is just like any other perforation. It's a hole. As the cornea is right in front of the eye, it's prone to injuries. So perforations can occur if somebody, for example, is hiking and has a branch, you know, poking in the eye from a tree or something, or a sliver if they're working in a bench and not using eye protection, just something hitting the cornea with enough force to cause mechanical damage. Having said that, perforations can also be caused by disease. So for example, severe eye infections leading to inflammation can cause ulcerations. And if these ulcers are not treated, the tissue damage just keeps going deeper and deeper. And in the end, you end up with a perforation.
Mm-hmm. And so common treatments for these perforations are typically corneal transplantation, as we understand. However, some of the downfalls are that there's donor shortages, with only around 1 in 70 patients being able to be treated this way. Also, other treatments can be toxic and incite inflammation, and certain bioadhesives we know can be uncomfortable to patients. So with kind of these complications in mind, can you expand on liquid cornea and how they address these pitfalls?
Okay, so the most common treatment right now with a perforation is if you go to the emergency room, they will put cyanoacrylate, also known as crazy glue or super glue, into the eye to seal the wound and then let the cornea heal. So basically they're saving the eye so that the person can be transplanted later. And as you mentioned, crazy glue is toxic. It will kill the cells around it. And it certainly will not promote regeneration. The liquid cornea, on the other hand, was designed to be an injectable hydrogel. It's a sealant plus a filler, so to fill any sort of a wound, ulcer, and also possibly for anterior lamellar grafts. So our latest iteration comprises a short collagen-like peptide of 27 amino acids and an inflammation-suppressing polymer. So it's an artificial phosphorylcholine polymer. We inject this into the wound where it spontaneously gels into a solid, and this is seamlessly integrated with the host tissue. So it will stimulate cells and corneal nerves to migrate over it and into it to regrow new corneal tissue.
Yeah, it's a really cool technology. And I think one of the interesting things is the administration route in particular. Can you kind of elaborate on why this administration route is so important and impactful in terms of like accessibility?
Well, right now, there are an estimated 12.7 million patients waiting for transplantation for solid donor corneas. And these people may have, accessibility problems because they have a high risk for rejection of grafts. And also, the surgery itself is invasive. You need an OR. In Montreal, it's about $38 a minute for an OR. So it makes it really not affordable for maybe, places in the developing world. So what we did was to try and develop something that could be used by millions of people. And we all know that the vaccines are pretty efficient in reaching large populations. We also know that if we have a hole in our tooth, we go to the dentist and the dentist fills the tooth. The dentist does not yank out the tooth and do a transplant. So, with these two things in mind, we designed a liquid cornea that is designed to be just injected into the wound and then it solidifies on its own. So, right now, the current iteration is stored frozen. So, we thaw it for 5 minutes before injecting. And, the goal is to treat cuts, holes, perforations to just regenerate the tissue. And if we do that for the small wounds, then we might a bit alleviate the need for donor cornea transplantation. So that's the design for the route of administration, and this is how we hope to increase the accessibility.
So, with the development of liquid cornea being so successful and promising, what is your vision for the future of this technology?
Well, right now we're only in the large animal studies. We hope that the large animal studies will go well. And we designed it for easy use by medical personnel. So basically, not just cornea surgeons. The idea is that it can be administered by ophthalmologists in the clinic, just like a dentist does the, filling of cavities in an office. We don't need an OR. And also, if it's easy to use, then we can use it not only in a large urban center with a hospital, but we can use it in developing countries with smaller clinics or even refugee camps with makeshift clinics. So the goal is that the liquid cornea will be something that's useful and something that will work side by side with other available treatments. It's not meant to replace something, it's meant to just augment the availability for treatment for the millions of patients who need it. And then, by filling small cuts and wounds, we can hopefully prevent the need for the transplantation.
And so, kind of building on this and your hopes for this technology, can you comment on how you expect this to impact patients' lives and their day-to-day lives?
Well, the liquid cornea is designed to fill and seal wounds and promote in situ tissue regeneration. This means that the patient's own progenitor cells from the remaining tissues will be stimulated to grow over the patch or to grow into the patch. So once our liquid patch is gelled, It should be integrated to the eye, and these cells should be able to grow in. During the first few months, or well, first few days especially, the patients would need to be really careful to make sure that the patch is kept clean. And then over the next few months as well, they'll probably get antibiotics that are prescribed by their doctor, and as well as steroids, depending on the condition. They probably should be wearing eye protection, and they need to be careful to also go for follow-ups with their doctors. But once everything is integrated, so we're stimulating the patient's own cells to regrow the cornea. Now, once that has regrown, that actually would be the patient's own cornea. So there should be no impact at all on the patient's daily life, since it's going to be, something that the body has just regrown and healed itself.
Very, very cool. Those are all the questions we have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time to chat about your ongoing research.
Well, thank you for having me on your program, and hopefully there will also be other people that would be interested in our liquid cornea.
Yeah, we hope so too. I'm sure they will be.
Thanks.
On behalf of myself, the director, Dr. Emilio Alarcon, and the whole Beats Research Radio team, thank you everyone for tuning in with us today. Beats Research Radio is supported by the University of Ottawa Heart Institute, Beats Laboratory, and the Department of Biochemistry, Microbiology, and Immunology at the University of Ottawa. Don't forget to follow us on social media to stay up to date on our latest releases. This episode was hosted by Devin Brain, written and edited by Erica Anderson, Tamara Sinek, and Rosalie Salati. All copyrights reserved to Beats Research Radio and University of Ottawa.